Art has no beginning and end. It's just kind of timeless because it can touch you and reach places that nothing else can.
Welcome to the Creative Tax Podcast with Mike Brennan. Hey friends, welcome to another episode of Creative Chats. I am your host, Mike Brennan, and this is the podcast where we talk about creativity, the creative process, and story. And I love to unpack these things mostly with my guests and explore how we can apply these things to our own creative processes and journeys. Now, I would love to also invite you to subscribe to the Daily Creative Habit email newsletter. Nobody needs more emails, I get that. But this email that I send out once a week is packed with some inspiration, some resources. I give daily creative prompts for you if you're looking for something to get you out of the rut, to kind of get the juices flowing, perfect for you. Also, we have a community over on Facebook that is called Daily Creative Habit as well. And I would love for you just to be taking a step to be a part of that community. Come around people who are like-minded, raising their hands to say, I want to show up more consistently for my creativity and craft. So if that's you, head on over to dailycreativehabit.com and you'll find all those resources there. Hey, I'd also love to invite you to check out my book, Make Fun a Habit. It's the creative playbook for making life and work fun again. If you have felt like fun has up and left the building somewhere along the way, I think we all do at some point. You find yourself centering around some practicality and responsibility and all the adulting words. If you need a little bit more fun in your life, in your work, in your experience, then I want to invite you to grab a copy of my book. It's 30 short chapters that give you some inspiration, some practical application and exercises so that you can start to experience some more fun in and around your life. Go to makefunahabit.com and grab your copy today. Hey friends, today's episode just makes me smile, and I'm sure it's going to have the same effect on you. My guest today is Lindsay Leverton, and we talk about so many different things. We go deep on this episode, and I really enjoyed our connection during this podcast. Really, the backdrop here is Lindsay wrote a book called Not Another Self-Help Book. And I even love the title. And we talk a little bit about that, of how there's this little bit of sarcasm, eye roll, even in the title. And so we talk about where that book came from, why she wrote it. We talk about some of her songwriting, some of her just we cover a lot of ground on this episode. And at the end of it, I really just felt like, you know, this is truly someone I could speak to for hours and still not probe the depths. Every once in a while, you just have one of those conversations and connections. And this was one of those for me. So I'm going to get out of the way here. You can listen to this episode and just bask in all the goodness of Lindsay Leverton. So without further ado, here is my creative chat with Lindsay Leverton. Well, Lindsay, welcome to the Creative Chats podcast.
Thank you. Welcome to you. Welcome to everyone listening and watching. I'm thrilled to be here.
Awesome. I love how we jumped on Zoom and immediately just had this connection. Just smiling, just laughing. I know this is going to be an awesome conversation.
I can't wait. It's good. You know, it's Friday. I don't know when this will be released, but I was really excited to get to chat with you. And then when you showed up on the video rocking those glasses and your cool hairstyle, I just thought, this guy looks really cool. I should have probably put on, you know, more makeup, but it's fine. It's gonna be good.
Yes, and the hair is always like, well, you know, I gotta do something with it. It's a little bit less than roll out of bed. A little gel works a lot of magic. That's what I say.
Nice. I like it.
Awesome. So before we get like too far into all the things, I love to just turn things back over to my guest and say, hey, if someone meets you at a party or you're someplace and they say, hey, it's great to meet you. Who are you? Like, what do you do? What is your answer to that?
Well, in real life, I would just be like, oh, you know, it doesn't matter. Do you need another drink? Tell me about you, you know, just because, I don't know, it's always a little awkward, but if I have to answer it, I would probably say I've got two kids, single mom of two kids. I work full time in the wealth management space, and in all 2 minutes of my free time per month, I like to sing, write songs, and I just released a book. So I'd maybe keep it that short.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. And that's just enough to go, ooh, tell me more, because that's interesting.
Oh, well, I'm glad that that's interesting. If you would have told me I was going to be, a director of wealth management at a boutique financial planning firm in Austin, I would have laughed at you because that sounds really boring and probably not something I would have gone into, but I love it. And I've been in finance for almost 15 years, so it's just been crazy. Yeah. And I
So,
have two rescue dogs and I have a blind rescue hedgehog named Hedgie, so we don't want to leave him out.
oh wow. Wow. This
Yeah,
story
he's the
just got
man of
even
the
more
house.
interesting.
Oh yes, I am. I think we're all interesting in our own ways. My life is a little like if Rain Man and then A Beautiful Mind got together and had a baby, and then that's kind of my brain and my life.
Well, hopefully we'll unpack a little bit of that today in this conversation. I am curious because normally people who, lean into their creativity, at least in some more of the expressive ways, song and art and writing and those kind of things, don't necessarily have as strong of a background in something that's like more business. It just seems like the two different sides that a lot of times war with each other. How do you navigate those pieces? And do you feel ever like they're spinning plates where it's like if you give attention to one, then all of a sudden the other is like, hey, I need to, jump over here and do this thing?
Do I ever feel that way? I will say, Mike, I never don't feel that way. There is not a day where I don't wake up and be it plate spinning, balls in the air, whatever metaphor you want to use. And I have to choose which plate am I going to let drop today? Or which collections of plates am I going to let drop today to have the least amount of negative impact? Because that's how it is. I mean, there's no way to juggle it all. This whole balance, it's like half the time I don't feel much balance, but it's taking each day for that day, doing the next right thing. Sometimes it's waking up, dropping the kids off and then hurrying downtown to my office for a Zoom. And then it's getting on a podcast like this. And then it's picking the kids up from school and getting them to horseback riding and coming home and doing dinner and putting them to bed. And then hopefully getting to watch an episode of Real Housewives. These are my goals. But yes, I feel that way every single day, and that's the type of person who I really wrote the book for. Is there's a point where you just get so overwhelmed because you are doing all the things, and at some point, your body, in my case, my body just said, nope. We're not doing this anymore. You have to find a way to care for yourself beyond, just a bubble bath once in a while. But yeah, it's gotten better, but I think I'll struggle with the spinning plates my whole life.
Yeah. And I think, talking about these things is important because so many times people feel that way, yet don't talk about it and then suffer in silence and think, I'm the only one who's having this experience. Therefore, I must be broken. There must be something wrong with me. I can't have the capacity to do all the things like everybody else seems to be doing. And
Right.
so I appreciate your just candidness in and honesty in just sharing your experience with that. And you mentioned the book, right? So the book is not another self-help book, right? Now, was the title like was that a little tongue-in-cheek kind of thing, like somebody going like, oh, not another self-help book? Or was there is that just
100%.
my New York?
No, that's
Okay.
exactly why I chose that title, was because it has this eye roll, like, oh my God, what we really need is another self-help book, right? If the first 10 didn't help, Sally, maybe the 11th one isn't going to do anything else. I don't know who Sally is. It's just what came in my mind. But yeah, it's that double entendre. Oh God, not another self-help book. I love sarcasm. It's one of my love languages. But then the other meaning is for the reader to understand, this is not just a normal self-help book or even a normal book. I mean, it has, I wanted it to have several mediums for consuming content or interacting with the book. So in between every chapter, there are adult coloring book pages that I created so that the reader can, you know, doodle and think about what they just read before they go on to the next chapter. There's also a QR code that leads to 16 of my original songs. And then each song is aligned with the chapter's theme. So it's really, it's just kind of a whole experience, a journey. And that's why the title just felt really perfect. And then subtitle, Finding Gifts in the Midst of Life Shit. That's what the whole book is about. So thanks for pointing out that. I was pretty proud of the title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I got it. But of course I love sarcasm too. So
I love that. You're, it's like, yeah, you did the eye roll. I love that.
Yeah.
It worked.
So, awesome. So when you have the idea for this book, first off, was there a catalyst moment that caused you to go, okay, I need to write this book and it needs to be now?
Yes, there was. It's so interesting that you asked that question. It'd been rolling around in my head for years. I mean, I've journaled. I love writing. I've always enjoyed, you know, writing songs or just getting out what's in my head, writing down things that were aha moments for me or that I learned. But it was always just kind of a thing that was percolating in the background. Like, yeah, maybe when I retire, I'll write a book or whatever. And then I had to struggle with the whole, it feels very egotistical, or at least it did to me. It felt a little narcissistic. Like, I'm going to write a book. I have such great things to say that I'm going to write a book. And it embarrassed me. I didn't want people to think like, oh, who are you? I mean, I have a history degree from Texas A&M University. And then I went straight into touring full time as a musician. And then I went into finance. So it's like, did you even take a creative writing class? No, I sure didn't. And so I struggled with a lot of different, you know, the narratives. You can't do this. It's going to be, who's going to read? Da, 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 da. So I'm meditating probably March, early on in COVID, maybe February, March of 2020. And like this clear message just kind of broke through all the noise. I didn't hear a voice, but it landed on my heart. It's like, Lindsay, it's time to write the book. And I was just, it was so jarring and so obvious that I couldn't not write it. It felt almost like a directive. And that was, you know, 4 years ago, almost probably to the month. And I wrote for 3 years. And it took a year just to do the editing because I wrote 292,000 words, Mike, and only 90,000 words fit in this guy.
Mm. Yeah.
So 200,000 words, just goodbye. Yeah. Maybe my next book, but, yeah, very, very intense moment.
How did that process develop for you in terms of how you approach things, how you thought about things in terms of even like the final product, having word like that many words cut out, knowing, okay, there is a revision process that happens to everything, right? And this certainly isn't the first thing you've created, so you know that. But in this context, it's different, right? So how does the process unfold for you and what is it teaching you?
Oh, goodness. How did the process unfold? It was daunting. I mean, it was really scary. And I could write songs in my sleep. This was something totally different. This was, I knew I was going to unpack some really painful stuff from my life. I really didn't have an end goal in mind. Some people sit down at their laptop and, you know, their little Word documents open, and then they just start typing. And, you know, and then a year later, we have a Harry Potter novel. I have no idea how anyone else does it. But for me, I knew it was not going to be traditional. Nothing about me is typical or normal. So I'm very visual. and I have to get everything out of my head onto some type of a whiteboard. So I bought this gigantic whiteboard that is so clunky and huge, and it's on wheels. And I locked myself in my garage for like 5 hours one Saturday. And I just started, when you talk about beautiful mind, imagine those rooms in CSI where they walk in and they see all the pictures and the yarn and yeah. all of that stuff. Except I wasn't planning a murder. It was a book. But that's what it looked like. And then I started building this puzzle. It's no different than what I do with financial planning. I'm gathering all the data and then I start building the puzzle. And it slowly started to unfold into something that I was not expecting at all. I thought it was going to be a book. The first title was The Gift of Pain, about my chronic pain journey and what I had learned and trying to help folks that have also experienced that. And then it just morphed into 16 chapters where every chapter highlighted a different gift that you would never associate with a gift. The gift of conflict, trauma, loss, tragedy, rejection, to name a few. And then I started building in these stories and songs and anecdotes. You know, it's not a memoir. It's memoir-ish because I include a lot of stories, but I also write about, you know, metaphors, news stories that I heard that reminded me of something. And once I got the structure, it was similar to building a house. Then I started filling in all of the components. And I would leave usually one weekend a quarter. I would just hide myself in an Airbnb and write for sometimes 14 hours a day. And I don't know, I didn't stop writing. It came out like you shook up a champagne bottle. So that's a little bit about the process. And then what was your second question? I already forgot it.
I did too.
Must have not been important. Well, it was really, if I need to answer it.
Yeah, I mean, what you learned about that, right? I mean, and I think you touched on something interesting because you said it's very much like what I do in the wealth management, financial planning type things, where you're gathering research and you're kind of, I guess, culling through that and organizing it in such a way. Mm-hmm. Was that something that you were very aware of as far as how you process things and your approach? Or was it just intuitive where you didn't think about it? And it's like, oh, this is just how I do things. And so I'm setting out and doing this thing that way too.
I think it was a little bit of both, but probably more the latter. And I mean, I'm 41, so I'm aware of it now. And now I see it as a superpower. It's my brain is what allows me to be successful and not only just, you know, my brain is what allowed me to not only tour and be a musician and write songs, but also run a really healthy, nonprofit organization as the executive director, making a living, understanding what it takes to actually run a successful business. It wasn't until I'd done that for 6 years that I thought, oh, all these other artists, similar to what you were saying, it's very rare to have an artist who, you know, can make a living as an independent artist. I never signed a label, so I was running my own business. That's, I think, when I realized, oh, my right brain and left brain are operating at the same capacity. And they're kind of just like these horses that line up. And then my psychiatrist, I've been with her for 10 years. I have, you know, some anxiety that was uncovered when my twins were born, as you can imagine. But I finally got a diagnosis of you're on the spectrum. I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. Because I've heard my whole life, like, nobody looks at something like that. Why would you, you know, even the publishing company said, we've never seen an author do what you did with your process. And I'm not trying to make myself sound special. It's just a total out of the box thinking that comes naturally to me. And now that I know kind of how my brain works, I'm able to better leverage it. I spent so much time in the beginning of my career in finance trying to fit into this mold because I'm not your normal finance person. Like, people meet me as a financial advisor and they're like, wait, what? You know, And as soon as I stopped trying to fit this mold, which is no offense, but kind of the pale male and stale role in the financial services industry, my career took off because I stepped into who I am, and I wasn't having to pretend to be someone to get certain clients. It's, I'm showing up as myself. It allows the clients to show up as themselves. When I write, I am very vulnerable. I'm too tired to be anybody else. Earlier you said, thanks for your candor. Like it's really just, I'm too tired to fake it or come up with something else. And so the readers hear that as well in the pages of the book.
You know, as I'm listening to your story, or at least the parts that we've uncovered so far, I love that there's this sense of you're creating things, but as you're creating things, you're also creating what your life looks like, what your experiences are, like who you are is coming more into focus. You're discovering things about yourself. And then once you know those things, you can lean into them with more purpose and intention.
And preach, Mike.
Yes. Well, and this is part of why I love having these conversations, is because I get to talk with somebody like yourself, and they share experiences, they share their creative processes, they share the things they're doing. And I'm hearing things, and I'm pulling on threads, and I'm seeing things, and hopefully able to mirror some things back to say, I am affirming that of what I see and hear in you, and do more of that, because that's what the world needs. The world needs more people showing up as themselves, not trying to fit into these roles and these, you know, things that they don't really belong in, but be themselves. But to be yourself, you have to know yourself first, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And it takes a lot of pain usually to know yourself. For me, I did not start knowing myself until I started suffering and really going through pretty significant trials and traumas early on in life. And I don't know which brilliant philosopher said this, but maybe Socrates or Plato, one of those guys. There's no learning without pain. And I used to have a real big problem with that quote. I can learn things without pain. Who's this jackass, you know? But it's true. It is, and for me, it has been true. The more that I've been able to move through painful times and integrate those parts of my life that may have split off during a past trauma, the more I know myself, the greater awareness I have. And then I feel much more aligned. And then I'm able to know, okay, this is how I am. Now I can leverage, you know, the positives, and then try to manage the parts of me that maybe I'm not so thrilled about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you typically look at your creativity as a vehicle to process and to understand what you're going through?
Yes, 100%. Because I wrote my first song at 17, and I don't know if I could have survived all those years in the closet and just all the pain and things I was contending with and struggling with if it wasn't for music, writing those songs, playing the guitar, playing the piano. And I can confidently say, even as I came out and lost my career, I continued to write and journal, and I would not have survived the last 3.5-4 years if I had not written the book. The book was the medicine. It really helped me survive the last about 3.5 years that have been the hardest few years of my life. And so, yeah, 100%. I don't know how people without a creative outlet work through stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't. Yeah. I have to. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way where it helps me make meaning. It helps give purpose a lot of times to things and helps me understand. And I always try to create things that are helpful for other people. And it's typically coming through something of my own experiences first. You know, the books that I've written, the art that I've created, anything that I've done creatively, you know, I realized earlier it used to feel like these things were competing with each other and going mm-hmm. like, well, I have interest in music, I have interest in visual art, I have interest in like all these different things. And it wasn't until later in life I realized, oh, I actually, the thing underneath it all, the thread is communication and communicating about my experiences. And once I realized that and uncovered that, and it took a lot of work and a lot of, like you said, pain to go through that and understand. But once I did identify that, I was like, oh, that gives me tremendous freedom to move in and out of these creative expressions, depending upon what's appropriate or depending upon what I feel I want to lean into in this season and say, here's how I want to show up. Here's what I want to say. Here's how I want to take the crap that I've been through, bring some redemption to it, not only for myself, but for somebody else, so that they can be encouraged, so that they can see they're not alone, so that they can have some hope in the midst of the things that they're dealing with, because God knows that I needed that when I was in the midst of those things.
Yeah. Gosh, I was about to say, I wish I could have recorded you just saying that. And then I remember, oh, it's literally what we're doing. But that's what the whole, my whole mission is with the book, is what you just said. Like, here's what I've been through. You've been through things. How do we find a way to redeem all the shit? It doesn't mean that everything happens for a reason. That's another, I dog on that phrase throughout the whole book. It drives me nuts. I do think some things happen for a reason. Sure. Absolutely. I've seen that time and again, but to say everything happens for a reason, it doesn't work anymore in our world. And I think it makes people think that there's some, you know, old gray-haired Santa God in the heavens just pulling strings, and this woman gets healed of cancer. Oh, but this one doesn't. Both people had people surrounding them praying that she would get healed. Just all the tragedies and the traumas that are going on in the world, and wars and geopolitical issues. I'm not going to go walk up to a little kid in Ukraine, be like, everything happens for a reason, or Gaza, everything happens for, it's like, you know what? Sometimes things just happen. If we can find redemption and if we can find purpose and meaning in it, it doesn't make it go away. It doesn't make the pain go away. But there's something really powerful about finding that purpose and kind of reclaiming your relationship with pain and loss, and trying to find those moments of redemption. You nailed it on the head. I can't wait to listen to this back.
There's a sense of creating beauty from ashes, right?
Yes. Where, ooh, that's one of my favorite verses.
Yes. And that doesn't happen by accident. You need to be open to that. And a lot of times you need to be pursuing that. And I think in terms of creating things, whether that's art, whether it's books, you know, whatever it is that we're creating, I think that helps give a place for us to work those things out and then give someone else an experience that maybe is more accessible so that they can start to process these things themselves. And I love that with the book that you wrote, it sounds like you have different access points for people, right?
Yes.
Like, you've got songs involved, you've got some visual things involved, you've got stories that you're sharing, and all these things are weaved together to give people an experience and give them places to grab a hold. And so maybe music's not their thing. That's fine. They can then latch onto something visual or whatever. In terms of like, what is it that you hope when someone encounters your book, what is it that you would hope that happens for that person?
My hope is that their pain would be alleviated just a little bit in some way, to give them a break from the overwhelm and the emotional exhaustion. And that then once you have that break and you have a little bit of like you're turning down the heat, then you're more open to receive the tools and the resources and, you know, the I hate this term, but best practices that I use to survive a bunch of shitty things, that hopefully people would walk away with a different paradigm of thinking about all that life throws at you. I think we grew up in this binary world of, you know, things are either going great or they're going bad. And if they're going great, you know, it's just a matter of time when they're going bad. And if they're going bad, it's probably always going to be this way. That's kind of how I approach the world. And I now realize it's not an either or, it's always the both and. And we're standing in the both and, where joy and sorrow are inextricably linked. There's no separating them. There's not going to be a day where it's all good stuff and no hard stuff. And as soon as I accepted that, and I'm trying to raise my kids like that, my whole life changed. You know, I stopped thinking about, I've got to get through this to get to the next thing so I'll be okay. It's like, no, life is riddled with wonderful moments of joy, with really hard moments that I've had where I did not know if I could face another day, getting into that darkness, those dark nights of the soul, and you're surprised when you wake up in the morning, and everything in between. So I think, I know that's a really long-winded answer, but the concise answer would be some pain relief, some emotional pain relief that is sustainable over time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's amazing how when we do these things for ourselves first, we create something that's meaningful for us, then we release it, and then it can do that for other people. And it can do even more things that we didn't even see coming. We didn't even intend on happening. And that's the beautiful thing about creativity. Yeah, I believe that totally. I know that when, and I'm sure you've experienced this even prior with songs, where you've written something, you have a certain context, you have a story that's behind that. And maybe you weren't sharing all the nuances of that, but you put the song out there and somebody listens and they're like, I love that song. And they claim it as their own and they assign their own stories to it. And you're like, Wow, that's weird, because that has nothing to do with what, you know, but right. For them it does. And that's the beautiful thing about art and how we can receive it and then give it even more meaning.
Yeah, that happened to me at a show recently. I was speaking at a women's conference and I weave songs throughout my talk or whatever. And this woman came up to me afterwards and she was like, you put words to something that I've been trying to communicate for a decade. You must have also been through. And then she went into this very specific experience. And I said, no, I didn't want to dash her hopes, but she thought, because of the meaning she assigned to the song, that I had been through the exact thing that she had been through. And I hadn't. The context could not have been more different, actually, in several different ways. But that's the beauty of creativity. She was convinced that this song meant this. And I love that, because it's this ever-breathing, you know, art has no beginning and end. It's just kind of timeless, because it can touch you and reach places that nothing else can, especially music. And I think my favorite, and it happens quite a bit, but my favorite thing is when I'm singing a song I wrote maybe even years and years ago, and then I hear it in a different way because I'm in a different place. Mm-hmm. And I almost feel like the song that I wrote for other people to encourage other people is now washing over me and encouraging me. That's a really powerful experience.
Yes. Yes. And that is so much more preferable than encountering something you made earlier in your life and cringing and going, ooh, that I was a different person.
Oh, I do that too. Yeah. My first two albums, I'm like, nobody can find those ever. Not that anyone would look, but well, nobody needs to find those.
And it still has a place for you because that helped you in that moment, you know?
Yeah, that's fair. Yep.
And so, you know, I have a friend who's like, yeah, I don't want any of the humble beginnings to be known. And I'm like, I get that from a certain point in terms of like even marketing and whatever. But when you start to posture too much, you lose the opportunity to reveal some of the vulnerabilities that come with, yeah, you know what? Like, I started like everybody else with just an idea. And then I had to figure out, what am I going to do with this? And maybe my context is a little different than you. Maybe I had different resources or different things available to me, certain privileges or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's this process of doing a lot of bad work before you get to good work. And nobody really gets the shortcut. I mean, sure, there's lightning in a bottle every once in a while where someone creates something and it's like, you know, wow, where did that come from? But typically it's do the work, show up again and again, be involved in the process and create more and iterate and revise and continue to press into yourself in that process. And as you're exploring meaning, as you're exploring purpose, and as you're thinking about the stuff, wrestling with it, let it shape you, but also shape the work in the process as well. Right.
I love that. You are filling my cup, Mike Brennan. This is, you're a smart dude.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. I just, you know, like you, I just want to live my life out loud. And the things that I've experienced and continue to, I want to offer them up to other people and be a help. Because if that stuff just gets tucked away in a journal that eventually ends up in a trash heap someplace or whatever, or people open it and can't read my handwriting because it looks like a doctor wrote it, you know, that's not going to help anybody. So I'd rather today just go, let's live life out loud, and do such in a way that everyone feels encouraged, to keep going.
I love that.
When you look at your other part of your life, right? The wealth management, do you see other places where there are systems or patterns or processes that also apply to your creative activities?
Yeah, I feel like it permeates every part of my life almost, even down to scheduling summer camps for the kids, logistical planning for the family. Am I going to have groceries so I can feed these tiny humans that are like so needy, such a blessed thing, but so needy, and, you know, eating all the things. I'm like, how do we need more bread? I ordered bread 3 days ago, you know? So I use it. It's just kind of like breathing. I think, the creative problem solver in me, sometimes it's really annoying because I would rather my brain not work like this 24/7. It's just, it's always on. And then I go to sleep. But I kind of have two speeds. I'm always on or I'm, you know, asleep. So approaching a situation, identifying, you know, what needs to be done, what are the goals? I'm not fun at parties at all. Like, I'm just, you know, what are the goals? And then we're going to mitigate risks, and then we're going to address the risks, and then we're going to manage the uncontrollables, and, you know, nerd alert. But it helps me survive and move through life, because I see it. I see it all. I'm very visual. And I think I got a little bit of a photographic memory from my granddad. So that's served me well, but I'm still a flailing, you know, mom over here trying to make a living and provide for my kids. And I fail miserably, usually once a day, at least, like those spinning plates, right? But at least I'm spinning them. There's been times in my life where I'm like, you know, screw, just all the plates can drop. I don't care anymore. Y'all can deal with the shards of plate matter, and it's all okay. All of it is a part of life. And it helps me make sense of the world that I live in, which is, that's what I really needed. And it took me a while. I felt so conflicted, even from a little girl, you know, feeling different, like I didn't belong, but I was relatively popular and got along with people because I like people. I can usually talk to an inanimate object if I needed to. But knowing then that I had this, you know, secret of being gay and being in the closet and not coming out till 26 and then feeling different and strange. And I knew my brain wasn't working like everyone around me. I would miss things. People would all be laughing at something and I would just miss it. Or I would say something and I don't really have a filter, and I wouldn't know that I'd said something problematic or potentially, you know, wrong until 10 people are staring at me. And finally getting to figure out like, oh, that's okay. That's all a part of who I am. And it's become about finding my people, finding community, people that celebrate me, that don't fill my mind with you're too much, you know, as if that's a bad thing. You said I want to live life out loud. Well, same. And that can be jarring for some people because you are a mirror to them. And if I live with passion, that rubs people the wrong way that are maybe they've given into mediocrity. So I don't know. I'm totally droning on and on, but those are just some of my thoughts.
Yeah, no. And I think, you know, you're spot on with that. Just even in saying, you know, if people say, oh, I'm too much, I mean, you, being comfortable with that and owning yourself, allows you to go, okay, those aren't my people. And I'll just make sure that I go and find my people, and realize I'm not going to be for everyone. And that's okay. That takes ownership over yourself, which comes through the process and the pain, like we talked about before.
My mentor said, you know, Lindsay, you may be the sweetest, juiciest plum in the whole world, but some people like peaches. Like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So I've just stopped trying to find the people who like peaches, right? Like, this is me. And if that's a problem, well, there's a billion other people in the world that you could get to know or be friends with or communicate with. What were you going to say?
I'm wondering if you have any creative practices that you do just for you, habits and practices that help you stay a little more centered, a little more aligned, a little more in the place of where you're checking in with yourself. And whether that's, we term that self-care, you know, self-validating yourself. I mean, what does that look like for you?
I don't know if you can call it a creative pursuit necessarily, but it is the way that I maintain sanity. I sit on my back porch in a lawn chair probably for an hour or two every evening, which is really bad in the summers in Texas because we're all burning alive here and all the mosquitoes. But for the most part, I'll sit out there and I'll either listen to the silence, I'll meditate. I love to listen to music, sometimes instrumental music, and that will inspire, especially instrumental music. I'll start writing lyrics in my phone, or I'll have a inspiration for a tune. And I also love listening to stand-up comedy. That is probably my favorite thing to do if I'm getting ready for work, if I'm driving. I used to just listen to the news all the time. And not, I mean, I still have to listen to the news and be up on what's going on because of my job. But now I listen to much more, you know, I listen to a lot more comedy. And that has been, that's made such a difference. Laughing, especially these past few years, goodness, things have been so heavy. And sometimes the only way to get a little bit of relief is by just laughing. And I think that's another reason why you'll find humor as a thread throughout the book. I love making people laugh. It's probably my favorite thing to do, because when someone laughs, temporarily they are forgetting about whatever has been hounding them. And again, it's creating that space. So those are just a few things. I also love crossword puzzles. I love jigsaw puzzles, doodling, big fan of doodling, and sitting down at my green piano and just playing.
Yeah. I love that. It's knowing yourself enough to know when you need to take moments like that, even if they come in small doses where you can fit them in and amongst the chaos and everything going on. But knowing that if you don't take those moments, then you can't show up as the best version of you because you're not taking care of yourself. Right.
Yeah. And I've learned that the hard way. I mean, what I'm saying is not, oh, I've arrived, I've got this. Mm-hmm. This is a result of falling on my ass 1,000 times because I am a recovering people pleaser, perfectionist, setting myself on fire to keep everyone else warm. And that just leaves you in a heap of ashes. And for me to be the type of mom that I want to be, which is my most important role on the planet, in my opinion, I've got to give those kids a mom who is whole and who is full, because otherwise they know when mom is burnt out, or they know when mom is struggling. And we so overuse this metaphor about putting the oxygen mask on ourselves first. Maybe we need to think of a new one. I'll work on that tonight when I can't sleep. But it's so true. It's so true. And so many of my friends, the people that really I wrote the book for, were not able to fully show up as our whole selves because we are so splintered and a lot of disassociation, because we're just trying to survive all the shit that life throws at us. And if we can start changing that mindset slowly, I mean, it can even just be a little tiny centimeter, and slowly over time, you know, you start changing your paradigm of thinking to maybe life is happening for me, mm-hmm. not to me. And getting out of that victim mindset that I didn't even really identify for probably 20 years. And now those old tapes will come back in, but I'm aware enough to say, no, that's not how we view the world anymore. You know, even as I'm sitting here, it's like, are they going to care that you can see my bed in the background and I look washed out? Should I get a ring light? Like these tapes are constantly playing in all of our heads. And it's just, it's not necessarily ignoring them or numbing them. What I talk about a lot in the book is I get curious about all that stuff. I want to get curious because I'm a data collector. I want all the data. So I get curious. I figure out, you know, why is this the case? And it never fails that I learn something pretty life-changing.
Mm, yeah. I love that you use the word curious, because I so value that word too, because for me, curious, you know, being curious leads to possibilities. Mm. It's following a thread of interest and going, I'm not really sure where this is going to go, but I'm going to keep following and start to discover, uncover some things, see what develops. And I think that's where you find some ideas that you would never find otherwise, because yep. if you're stuck in the rut of the same old, you're not open to something new. And you're not curious, you're not going, this is of interest to me, I want to feed that interest, then you're going to have a lot less ideas, and you're going to have a lot less creative momentum, I think.
Yes.
You know, it's just a powerful thing to be curious.
Mm. Yeah. And there are moments where I know that you can relate, most people that are listening can relate, where you get so stuck that you lose that curiosity because your brain is just maxed out. You're done. There, it does not compute, error 404 message or whatever. Just like when my phone freezes, cause I never turn it off. I'm the worst about that. But my brain does that too. My brain is like, nope, we are not computing one additional thought. We're not going to get curious. We're not, there's no space. Our brain capacities are stolen. In fact, I was listening to this very fascinating speaker. She's like a behavioral neurologist. I don't know. She spoke at this conference I was at, and she talked about even just having your self view on during a Zoom meeting takes about 20% of the capacity of your brain, takes it away. And so ever since I read that, I have hide self view on my Zooms, which can be awkward at times if there's like a naked kid running behind me, or, you know, my dog is doing something, humping the pillow in the background. But that brain capacity, now that I know different things that are stealing my brain capacity, I'm trying really hard to limit whatever those things are. Constant noise. Sometimes I'll just drive in silence because I've got to free up that brain space. Otherwise, there's no room for creativity, because mm-hmm. there's no room for curiosity, because I'm just trying to get through the next moment. So I've been there too. And if we can sit with that and not rush those moments and lean into the pause of, okay, I'm going through some serious shit. and I don't have to rush out of this. Not that I have to stay there forever. It happened to me just last night. I was feeling some just heavy over the last few days and didn't really know why. And then last night, I'm crying on my back porch. A song kind of broke me open that I was listening to. And my immediate inclination was, oh, yeah, put it back in. Because sometimes I'm worried if I start releasing the pressure, I'm never going to stop. It's just 41 years of, you know, pent up trauma and all this stuff will come out. But it was really painful. And then there was this moment where probably about an hour later, it had moved through my body, the heaviness over the last few days, which I identified as grief. I'm grieving. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we don't have time to get into it, but right now I'm grieving. And to be able to sit in that and let it go and let it flow through me, I went to bed and slept like a baby. And I feel a little lighter today, though I'm still grieving. Mm-hmm. The grief doesn't feel as heavy like a blanket today. Today it's like a napkin, you know, not so much a weighted blanket.
Yeah. Yeah. So much of what you've spoken about comes out of awareness. And being able to sit with yourself, check in with yourself, go to therapy and do the work on yourself and with yourself so that you know what's happening. Mm-hmm. And you're able to move through those things and know when there's a season of something and when there's something deeper that you need to uncover or work on. You know, I'm a big believer. I think everybody should be in therapy, honestly, because
Same. We
all have things that we need to address, that we need to discover, uncover. And doing the work on ourselves is something that, you know, no one can do for us. Nope. We need to choose and value ourselves and invest in ourselves. And I think the more that we do that, the more whole we can show up, or the more authentic we can show up. And that will touch all the things that we do, all the things we create, all the relationships that we have, just who we are in the world, you know?
Yeah, 100%. I could not agree more.
Mm, love it. We're at the top of our time already, believe it or not. And I'm like, man, I feel like I could talk to you for like hours. Yeah. But I would love to just ask you a final question of like, what, and maybe this is hard for you to think about because you're still kind of like with the book, but is there something else you would love to create, perhaps, that you think, you know, this is something I'm curious about, this is something I'm interested in, I would love to do this one day?
Oh, I love that question. You have all the questions. Two things, if I can indulge you.
Absolutely.
Number one, this is not going to be the last book I write. Mm-hmm. It can't be. I loved everything about the process, even the year of cutting 200,000 words that mattered to me. So I have already started building the roadmap for the second book, writing a little bit, you know, as it comes to me. And I don't really have a clue what it's going to be about, but it will most likely be about what I've been going through the past 3 years and moving through that. So I'm really excited about that. But what I'm probably most excited about and what I think about in the morning and the last thing I think about when I go to bed is developing a really solid, hilarious 30, 45 minute stand-up comedy bit. So I've been collecting and working on bits for years. I have this Evernote document that, I mean, if you scrolled, it would take you probably 5 minutes. So, I mean, just content and stuff that I've done a few open mics and they went so well. I had a blast. So I would like to really develop some type of a comedy bit and do that and make people laugh. If I could retire from my firm that I'm at now, you know, 60, 65, and be a touring stand-up comedian until I'm either have Alzheimer's, which I think maybe I would still do it because that'd be really funny. Like, there's no Alzheimer's comedians, you know, like you already told that joke. Well, that's why it's funny, because I have Alzheimer's. No, I don't mean to joke about a serious disease. My grandmother had it for 10 years. But touring and making people laugh, I would die the happiest human on the planet if I could do that.
Mm, love that. Love that.
So we'll see.
There's always new ground to be taken, new things to explore, to follow that curiosity. And yeah, I love that you're showing up, engaging, you're putting yourself out there. you know,
That's
Lindsay,
scary.
It is. But when I, even in this short amount of time we've been able to talk and just share this experience, I see someone who is a beautiful soul that radiates authenticity, who
thank you. That's really
knows
sweet.
Herself, who's worked on herself, continues to do that, knows herself, and wants to help other people. Those are all beautiful things, admirable things. And I just want to affirm that in you and thank you for the work that you've done and that you continue to do. The book, songs, just you showing up in everyday life as you interact with people, that is a gift. And keep doing that.
I will. If I didn't cry so much last night, I probably would have just lost it. So thank goodness I did. Thank you. I feel the same way about you. Mutual Admiration Society. Like you have, I don't know, you've connected in a really profound way, and we're separated by who knows how many miles and this Zoom screen. But thank you. That affirmation means a lot. And I received that for sure.
Awesome. Well, tell us where people can find you, find the book, you know, some of the links and things that, so that people say, I love this conversation. I want to get to know Lindsay even better. Where can they go?
Notanotherselfhelpbook.com. I know everyone's, they go on social media. They don't really go to websites maybe anymore, but that's the best place. You can click on the book link. It'll take you right to Amazon. It'll be in your, you know, mailbox in 2 days or whatever. And, you know, Lindsay K. Leverton is my full name on Instagram, Facebook. But go into that website and sign up for the newsletter. I know everyone asks people to sign up for newsletters. I only send one a month, but I pack a lot in there. So podcasts I've been on, I do a song spotlight, a gift spotlight, and I'll, you know, write a little bit of content. But it's called my Not Spam newsletter. And that'll keep you updated. I'm also doing an interview series throughout this year. So I release one a month where I interview a badass woman. No offense, Mike, but a badass woman. It's called the She's a Lot interview series. And so I, you know, put that in the newsletter too. So that's probably the best way. Not another selfhelpbook.com.
Awesome. Awesome. And I'll be sure to put that in the show notes so people can just click, follow along real easily. And again, I just want to thank you so much for your time today, for your generosity of sharing yourself, sharing your story, sharing your creativity with us. I know it's going to encourage a lot of people today.
I hope so. And thank you for having me on. I hope that you will stay in touch because I really love your vibe and I wish you all the best on your podcast and your books and everything you're doing to just bring hope through creativity. It's really rad.
Thanks for listening today. I'd appreciate it if you would subscribe, leave a rating and a review. It really helps this podcast be seen and heard by others.